Hey, hey, it's Casual Jake.
And I'm Taito.
And this is the MTG Educators Network podcast.
Yes.
You are listening to, I guess this will be episode 4, right?
Yeah.
Episode 4. Hey, so exciting. Who would have thought that we would be getting so far so quickly? I mean, we've kept up pretty good with our weekly uploads, wouldn't you say, Taito?
Yeah, honestly, and if I remember correctly, when we were discussing, we were talking about doing once every 2 weeks, but we've just had so many good ideas that we've been moving forward with it, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yes, and we've definitely been talking to the other educators in the network, so you'll be hearing from them soon. We got some very interesting topics, some non-magic stuff, but today we are going to be tackling some magic stuff. So why don't you tell them about what we're talking about today, Taito?
Yeah, I definitely think that this set is something that a lot of people were really excited for. If you see the title of the podcast or the title of the video, you will see we're going to be talking about Commander Legends, a set that I am so excited for. It's almost here. We really wanted to look through and preview some of the cards that we are most excited for and we think are going to affect this format that we're both really passionate about.
No, for sure. I think Commander is both of our favorite sets,
mm-hmm.
Or should I say our favorite format, should I say. And seeing that this was designed from the ground up for Commander players, I know that really excites me, and I'm sure it excites you.
Yeah, we've had sets before that have been really good for Commander. The ones that come to mind specifically are Battle Bond, the two Conspiracy sets, even Modern Horizons, which I think is really ironic and got a lot of people's panties in a twist, if you will. But
oh, yeah.
this set is just super, super cool. And there's so many cards that we wanted to talk about that we actually had to break it up into a couple of different categories so we can kind of do it in a bunch of chunks.
Sure. And the first thing that we're going to talk about are the cards that we think are going to be the most impactful for our format as commanders, so the actual commanders of our decks.
Right. People, when you talk about a deck, the first question is, who's the commander, right? And then you mm-hmm. talk about the theme, but the commander is definitely the first important one. But can't have a commander deck without the rest of the 99. So after we talk about the commanders, we're going to be talking about a trip into the 99. We're going to pick out the cards that we think you're going to see in a lot of decks going forward, either because they'll be more readily available or because they're going to be so, so good in so many decks.
Correct. And then finally, Taito and I are going to each talk about the commanders that we personally are most excited to build once Commander Legends comes out. So that's going to be a lot of fun to kind of pick our brains and see where our minds go when we see the set. What kind of jumps out to us?
Right. And I think there's something like 70 plus new legends in this set. There's a bunch of new partners. Man. We're going to get new access to some of the old partners again because they're actually being somewhat printed into the set. There's that new sweet foil etched that we can get for some of those commanders.
Yes.
Looks really nice.
It looks great, but I think we got a lot of commanders to go, so I think we should get going, man.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So let's start with our first one. The first one we are going to be talking about is Gen Arcanum Weaver. Okay, so
ooh,
this
good
is
one.
A Mardu commander. He does cost Mardu, so a red, a white, and a black. Legendary creature, human wizard, and it's a 2/3. And it has a fairly straightforward ability. Pay Mardu, again, red, white, and black. Tap it, sacrifice an enchantment. That's all the cost. So 3 mana of Mardu colors, tap it, sacrifice an enchantment, and you get to return target enchantment card from your graveyard to the battlefield.
Mardu enchantments? You have piqued my curiosity.
Yeah, so I chose this one actually on my list for commanders that we think are going to be the most impactful because it's an entirely new strategy, or it's a popular strategy, but in an entirely new color section because we don't
right,
see
right, right.
Bant, Simic, Orzhov, or not Orzhov, Azorius. Those are the enchantment colors. Maybe Selesnya. Mardu is very, very different.
Yeah, very new to the enchantment game, if you will. Not that they haven't had enchantments. It's just, I think you're right. It's not an archetype that's really been supported in the Mardu color.
Yeah, and the first things that came to my mind, of course, are you're reanimating enchantments, and red and black are both very good about getting cards into your graveyard. And then I also,
right.
for some reason, my mind immediately, maybe because of the colors, went to curses. So I was thinking
oh, wow.
you could do
yeah.
like a Mardu curses build. So I think that would be really interesting. So I just think that this commander is going to be a breath of fresh air for the format because of the play patterns, the colors, and the strategy in a not supported color wedge.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really cool. I think it was one of those commanders that as soon as it came out, like a lot of eyebrows got raised and were like, oh, and because it is so refreshing, a lot of people want to build around it. Like you said, you talked about curses, whatnot. I know someone who talked about a stacks build where they get the stacks pieces in, and then right before it's their upkeep, before it affects them, they, on the end of their opponent's turn, they sacrifice it, bring out something that's going to help them, and they kind of go back and forth. So then on their turn, they can bring the stacks piece back out, and they can like kind of, you know, find ways to untap their commander. And so kind of like that, okay, I'm going to stacks you out, but then I'm going to sacrifice those to get me better stuff and vice versa.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I hadn't even thought about that. I was also thinking this is a really good deck for like a Pillow Fort style. You get like that Sphere of Safety is going to be a huge card in this deck. Obviously, Smothering Tithe is going to be super, super good. I think a card that we actually saw when I was on Elder Dragon Skypelander, Underworld Breach could be really good in this deck, right?
Yeah.
So there's so many possibilities, and you're going to get to see a lot of interesting cards, like whack constellation cards. Like I'm going to throw a card out there that a lot of people probably don't even know about. You could get, what is it? It's something giant, Doomwake Giant. It's a constellation card.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to have to Google that one.
It's a constellation card from Journey into Nyx. I'm going to try to guess it because I don't have it up. It's like 6 mana, and it's constellation. Creatures get like -1/-1 this turn. Another one is Brain Maggot, I think is what it is. It's like a 2-cost mm-hmm. enchantment creature. These are all like Journey into Nyx cards that were really popular in Standard at the time because of Junk, which was the old word for Abzan, constellation in the deck. So, yeah. This deck is going to be really interesting, and I think it's going to be a really cool, like, if someone sits down and go, I have, again, Arcanum Weaver deck, I'm going to be, oh, that's awesome. Like, I'm so excited to play against that until it stacks, and then I will not be.
And then you're not very fun. Right. Well, I think another one that piqued a lot of people's interest, but mostly because it's almost like a better version of a commander we already see, this being, is it AC Tyrant of Gyre Strait?
Yeah.
So this is what I've heard as the better Tatiova. And, you know, Tatiova, of course, Benthic Druid being a powerhouse card already, being just a card that people love. It's just a value engine. So AC says, you may play an additional land on each of your turns, which is already incredible. And then whenever a land enters the battlefield under your control, you may draw a card. So the reason why they say it's a better Tatiova is because you get to play an extra land, and it's like, oh, to balance that, Wizards were like, well, we'll take away the life gain. It's like, no. The life gain was not why we played Tatiova. It was, you know, the value. And so getting this value plus the additional land, I think you're going to see a lot of Simic ramp kind of decks built around this.
Yeah, and honestly, it's a solid card, and it is good enough to go in literally every Simic or green blue X deck.
Yeah, it's kind of like, it kind of goes in there with like the Nyx Bloom, Ancients, the Azusa. You know, you're trying
Oracle.
To make you're trying to make a lot of mana. So I think we're going to see this as a commander. Play as a commander early out of the gate. People are going to be like, oh, I'm going to just, you know, take Tatiova out, put in the 99, switch in AC out. Then I think people are going to be like, you know what? I'm going to try it out in more of the 99 for my other decks. And so we're going to see it in the 99 as well as a commander.
I think I would go so far as to say that flat out, if you have a Tatiova deck right now, it will be an AC deck come the set release. And there's almost no argument against it. Budget would probably be the number one argument against it, because this is a mythic that you have to get out of a pre-con. It's hard to make an argument to not switch to an AC deck.
Right. But I mean, even the pre-cons are what, like $20?
I think these ones are like 30 or so, but I'm not
okay.
sure.
I haven't checked this pre-con, but they've been really good mm-hmm. about getting good reprints and good value in there. So if this is something that you're interested in, if you have a Tatiova deck, I would almost say that it's worth spending the $30, cracking this guy open, getting, I'm sure, the other great landfall stuff that's in that deck, and, you know, boosting up your Tatiova deck.
Yeah, and if I'm correct, this is along the lines of the Zendikar precons, where it is only like 3 new cards and then the rest are reprints. And we can look back at those, like the Anowon deck had like Una, it had Sig, it had good reprints.
Sick cards.
It had good cards and it was worth the value. So I think it'll
it's like Wizards
it.
Listened. We want good reprints, and we got them. Yeah, yeah, the land drop one had Omnath, Locus of the Rage. Mm-hmm. I mean, we could go on. That was, I think, really good precons. If you haven't checked them out, check them out, because they're just, even if you don't like the face card, the value is there.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's another great commander that I think we're going to see a lot of.
Yeah, and it's definitely, it's again, like I said, it'll go in most green, blue, or green, blue X decks. Now, this next one, though, is completely opposite. It's technically colorless. I put this one on here as it was, I think, the first card they spoiled from Commander Legends, and it really set the tone for the set. And it mm-hmm. is the Prismatic Piper with gorgeous art from my hero, Seb McKinnon. It's beautiful. Beautiful.
I love the art. I have opinions about the card.
Yeah. It's good because I the way that you said that makes me think that we are of different mindsets of this, at least somewhat. So sure. It'll be a nice little fun discussion. So let's read the card. Prismatic Piper is 5 generic mana, right? So just 5 CMC, legendary creature shapeshifter. If the Prismatic Piper is your commander, choose a color before the game begins. The Prismatic Piper is the chosen color and it has partner. It's also a 3/3.
Yeah, I mean, boo, I don't like it. So I have reasons why I don't like it, but you sound excited. So why don't you talk about why you like it? And then I'll kind of counter with my ideas.
Yeah, so I'm fairly certain I know what you're going to say. And I do agree with your points. I'll even put that out of the way because I do agree with what you're going to say. However,
you already know the complaints.
Yes. However, a lot of the time when I was looking at partner commanders, there would be one that I liked and I would go, okay, well, what am I going to do with this? I do want to add another color. And if I were to do that by adding in another commander, personally, at least, I would feel as if I then needed to cater to that commander because I'd feel like wrong not playing that commander and only using it for the color because it's not what it was intended for. This one lets me literally use it for the color, and that's what it was intended for. Now, I had and this is the funny part, I had a brain fart when this card was announced because I've never played with partners in the command zone.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's fun, by the way. It's a great,
sure.
It's a mechanic that I have opinions, but I do overall like it.
Yeah, and the thing that I forgot about is that it needs to be partnered with a partner. That was something that when the card got announced, I was like, this is nuts. I'm just going to take like any old two-color commander and slap Prismatic Piper into the third color.
Right. Luckily, it didn't do that. I would very much hate the card at that point. But
yes, so that's what I think. I think that it is nice to be able to add that extra color. And honestly, again, because of the format and we have Rule Zero, you could always, if you don't agree with it, you can just not allow it in your play group. So you can maybe like say, like, hey, maybe let's not do that. But let's hear what you have to say, Jake.
Sure. So I wouldn't go that extreme. I will if I saw a Prismatic Piper, because you've actually kind of helped me a little bit in a way. I like what you said, where you said, I want to play this partner, but I feel bad adding a partner that just for the color.
Mm-hmm.
I think Prismatic Piper is great for that. Just adding the extra color. Because really, I mean, what are you, you're not going to cast this. I mean, there's no reason to.
No.
You know what I mean? Like for 5, you get a 3/3 that is a color. Yeah, there's no reason to cast it. It literally just adds another color blip to your commander identity. That being said, my issue with that isn't that like the point of Commander is the restriction? You know, I can think of a lot of decks where, oh, if I could just add blue or black, this deck would be great, even better. Or green, oh my gosh, if I could just add ramp to things. I mean, and I love ramp. So, you know, of course, like the Timmy in me is like, oh, just add this to whatever I want. Now I can just ramp out. But that also, to me, defeats the purpose of color identity and the restriction. Again, not that I would say, hey, you're playing Prismatic Piper. I don't want to play against that. I don't think it's oppressive. I don't think it's busted. I don't think it's anything. For me, it goes a little bit against the spirit, but I'm not going to judge someone. Because I do like what you said, where you have a partner. I'm thinking of, is it Rhea?
Last of the Abzan?
Yes, yes, yes. I love that. I hate that it's not an Abzan commander. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a Golgari commander. So Prismatic Piper would make it an Abzan commander, and I wouldn't have to throw in like Timna or something else to add that white. I could just make it a Rhea deck with, you know, actual Abzan. So I kind of like what you said about that. You've made me think about it a little bit differently, but I still kind of stand by. I just don't really like the design. I don't like that it just adds a color. That's a personal thing. I don't think the card's busted. I don't think it should be banned. I don't necessarily I'm not one of those, R&D is trying to mess up everything. It's whatever. I just don't like it. So I'm not going to play it. And I think that's how we should view a lot of cards, to be honest.
Yeah, I definitely, like I said, I do agree with you on almost everything you said. And I do think that it's right at the cliff's edge, right there.
Yeah.
And I think one of the other reasons that lets me be okay with this card is the fact that no partner on its own, with, you know, some possible exceptions if you build the deck the right way, is broken. They're mostly value-based.
Sure.
They're mostly value-based commanders. Like, if we had a partner that read, like, let's say, Muldrotha, right? Let's say there was a partner that had Moldrotha's ability. Absolutely, this card should never be printed ever. Like, yeah. adding an extra ability onto a commander that is that strong is
sure.
That's terrifying. But like, let's say like you wanted to play like three color Merfolk, and you did like Thrasios in the Prismatic Pipe.
Oh like, yeah, you know what? And you're gonna get me right there because I do want a Bant Merfolk commander. And like the professor, I'm very, very upset we did not get it in this set.
Right. So that's where I think. And again, this kind of comes down to the format itself kind of policing, right? And
dang it, like, now I got to get this card.
So I think it comes down to the format policing itself. Like, hey, like, let's not just use this to make our decks better. Let's use it to cover the weaknesses that aren't in the format yet, right? The kind of that idea of like Morophon the Boundless, right? Morophon covers for the fact that there's not a tribal commander. Not everyone's building five color with Morophon. Some people are just building two colors with Morophon or three colors with Morophon, but they don't have like a Jund Werewolf commander, right?
Right.
So that's something that I think that this commander will help us kind of cover.
You've changed my mind a little bit. I still feel, and again, we agree on certain stuff, but I'm a little bit more open-minded to it.
Yeah.
What I'm very sure about is we're going to see this next card again. This we're going to see a lot. This is Sakashima of 1,000 Faces. Yes. What a cool card. I think it's a cool ability, and we'll get into it a little bit. But here, it's a legendary creature. It's a human rogue, a 3/1 for 4, a 3 and a blue. And it reads, you may have Sakashima of 1,000 Faces into the battlefield as a copy of another creature you control, except it has Sakashima of 1,000 Faces other abilities. What's that ability, you ask? It's the legend rule, in quotes, the legend rule, doesn't apply to the permanents you control. So this commander basically is it a mirror gallery?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a mirror gallery in your command zone that you get to play, and suddenly the legend rule doesn't exist for you. Cool. I think it's cool.
Mm-hmm. I agree. The first thought that came to me is my new Tazri deck. That's a rogue. That's a part of the party. Mm-hmm. And
there you go.
A lot of the good party members are legendary. So I could throw that in, make it another Morag Fury of Akum, slap down a land, and just watch those triggers go nuts.
For sure. The first thing I thought of, which, oh, and I'm so sorry, by the way, this does have partners, so you can partner it with another. It's not just a mono blue commander, which I think you will see it as partners, but I do think you're going to see this one in a lot of 99s too. I thought of that, man, I should have looked it up before, but it's the Dimir Rogue that when it does damage to
Atrada the Silencer.
Atrada, yes. So in that, you want stuff like this to where you can make copies of Atrada and hit everyone at the same time, hit them more often and stuff like that. So I think this, again, goes in a deck similar to something like that, where you want to copy your commander.
Yeah, and Atrada, for those of you who don't know, it shuffles itself into the library, which would then, you know, it goes into your command zone if you're playing it as your commander. But Sakashima would also count for that. So it would work out well so that you wouldn't have to, because you need three triggers of Atrada to win the game. But if you have a Sakashima out, you then get two right away without having to play Atrada again. So yeah, that's definitely, copying your commander is really good. I think that Rogue Tribal would even be fine with this. Even just making like another copy of Anawan is really good.
Sure. I mean, I immediately thought of my Yuriko deck, you know, more activations on Yuriko. Even if I don't swing in with it, make it a copy of Yuriko, hit in with two or three ninjas. Now I got, you know, that's two or three times two, because I have two Yurikos that are triggering. So I think it's a cool deck. I think it opens up to a lot of stuff. I think it's, I've seen some brews within the command zone. For me personally, I'm probably going to put it in the 99 most of the time for me. But I do think you're going to see it as a partner a lot in your various groups.
Yeah, I definitely, that's the two places I saw myself also having it, because we've talked about this. We do share a Yuriko deck. We do both have a Yuriko deck. So
yes,
I would probably,
which we need to play sometime against each other.
I don't think anyone at the table would enjoy that. I would definitely put it in Yuriko to get double Yuriko triggers. That's definitely going in there, as that's one of my more competitive-ish builds. And then I'd also probably be putting it in Tazri, because there are so many legendary creatures in that deck that I'd love to make a copy of.
Sweet. Yeah, it's a sweet card. I think good design, very flavorful to the Sakashima, you know, character as well. So I think it's just an overall win.
Yeah, for sure. And you know what else is an overall win? Planeswalkers as commanders, which I have not shilled for on this show yet. So the last one in this section here is Tevesh Zot, Doom of Fools. Okay. This is a legendary planeswalker, Zot, or Zot, depending on how you want to, I don't know exactly how it's pronounced. costs 5 mana, 4 and a black. And he has partner, and he can be played as your commander, and he starts at 4 loyalty, okay? So now let's run through his loyalty abilities very quickly. He has a +2, create 2/0/1 black thrall creature tokens. He has a +1, you may sacrifice another creature or planeswalker. If you do, draw 2 cards, then draw another card if the sacrificed permanent was a commander. And -10, gain control of all commanders. Put all commanders from the command zone onto the battlefield under your control.
Busted, unfun, ban it right away, is what people said. Then I think they realized, oh, wait, this guy has to make it around the table quite a bit. You know, there's a lot of turns before he gets to that ultimate. I don't think that's going to happen very often.
Right. And that's definitely one of my biggest things that I'll say with Planeswalkers as commanders is I want it very badly. I think that it would not harm the format overall that much because, one, I don't think you would see it too often because they're not good. They're not great.
They're just not good. They're not as good as commander as a creature because you can't attack a creature.
Right. And it, like, you'll play it, get one activation, and like, it'll go around the table and probably be dead.
Right.
But,
well, it's one of those card types that as soon as you play it, immediately everyone in the table goes, whoop, that's value. Time to, you know, we have to push them back.
Exactly. So the reason, though, I did still put Tevez out here is because, and one of my friends, shout out to the homie Ryan from my team Spicy Boys. He convinced me to put this in here as a really strong aristocrat commander. Because he does everything that you want, and he can work in the 99 for that as well. But he can create sacrifice fodder. He could create those 2 thralls, right? He can He has the sacrifice right on him, and it's a plus ability. And you also get to draw cards. So he's both the sacrifice and the sacrifice payoff in that. -10, sure. Whatever, it is what it is. But those first two abilities are both really important in a deck that could be, or would be really important in an aristocrat's deck.
Sure. I think when the -10 happens, it'll be well earned by the person who did it. If this thing minuses 10, either they found something broken that I don't see and they were able to -10 it on turn, you know, the turn they played it, or you didn't properly threat assess, you know, if you're the other player. I think you're right. I think it's actually the value in it comes from the plus abilities. And the fact that it has 2 plus abilities, that those abilities, no matter what, are adding to the aristocratic kind of plan, building your board, protecting itself, drawing your cards, getting you value while taking up the loyalty on the Planeswalker itself. Yeah, I think it's going to be good. I just thought about this. It doesn't partner. I'm trying to think of a partner with it. I was thinking about the aristocrat commander, the new Orzhov one that when you make extra tokens or whatever, that's not a partner.
Yeah, it's Talise. It's the uncommon Orzhov one, I think.
Right.
I think that you'll probably see something in this, like you'll see it's interesting because you can partner a creature with it. It doesn't just have to be a planeswalker, right?
That
so
is
you
interesting.
Could do something like you could do just something like Timna and go black white. You could do honestly, if you're gonna be really focusing on Tevez that, you probably go like Abzan, because then you can play like doubling season. You can get him. Now don't get me wrong, WotC's not dumb anymore. They put him at 4 so that when he enters with doubling season he comes in at 8 and his ultimate is at 10. That's right. Not unintentional. That is not a coincidence. So
right. We're thinking here, we're playtesting.
I do think that might be where you would probably want to go is possibly like a green white partner, which is that Condor guy, right? I forget his first name. It's the guy
on the horse.
So I think that's probably where I would go, but then again, you've now put me in the spot, or I've now been put into the spot where I don't feel like I want to play that commander in this deck. It's more of an aristocrat's deck, but I'm playing him just for the colors, which again, that's more of a personal thing.
Sure. No, I think it's a cool card. I think a lot of people who crack it are going to be like, yeah, I'm going to play this. You know, it's kind of one of those mythics where you crack it and you're like, how do I not play this? Like, you know, it was thrusted upon me. So I think we're going to see it. I think if you see it in the command zone, you'll see it very early on. And then I think it's another one of those that it's not going to stay necessarily a commander staple as far as a commander.
Yeah, the card that always brings to mind with this too is I could see it comboing really well with Liliana Dreadhorde General. That would be a really good combination there. So it'll definitely, maybe there'll be like a mono black aristocrats build with Tevez Zod. Who knows? But I definitely think that it is a good card.
No, I think so too. Well, those were the commanders that we think are going to have some high impact on the format, at least that you're going to see a lot, should we say. And next, we want to talk about the 99, and there's a lot of cards in here. So before we get into some of the more choice picks, there are a few cards that we definitely need to touch on that we need to talk about as a whole community. And so I think one of those, and a big one, everyone knows it, the Jeweled Lotus. Lots of conversations going on right now. The Jeweled Lotus is a zero-cost artifact that has tap, sacrifice Jeweled Lotus, add 3 mana of any one color, spend this mana only to cast your commander. Wait, Taito, isn't that Black Lotus for commander?
Yeah, it is. And honestly, I think this is a card. I'm going to choose my words carefully here. I think this is a card that the reaction from the MTG community is exceedingly predictable about. I think this is a card that they see this and they go, oh my gosh, this is going in literally every deck. This is going to be $1,000 card. It's ridiculous. It's so good. And I've watched quite a few people's reactions about this and their thoughts on it. And while it has toned down since the announcement, I definitely do still think that there is a teeny bit of overhype about this card, specifically because of that one part where it says add 3 mana of any one color, right? It's only mm-hmm. one color. Now, is this going to go in basically every monocolor deck? Yes, no reason it shouldn't. Is this going to go in basically...
Well, I would say the only reason is the price.
Yes, for sure. Exactly. And a lot of the time when I say that, I definitely will... like it's price notwithstanding, basically.
Sure.
It's in an optimized list, if you want to say that, for like 6 to 8 range. Like, there's no reason it shouldn't go in a monocolor. There's no reason it shouldn't go in most 2-color decks. 3-color, I think there are some of them that it will go into. So something like Muldrotha, where it has 3 generic, this can just cover your 3 generic and you can get this card out on turn 2 or 3. But then you also have things like Kethys or, again, Arcanum Weaver. It's only you're going to be losing mana in that scenario. So I do think that it is a good card, but I think that it is a little bit overhyped, and I do think it'll end up being along the lines of, I don't even know, like worse than Sol Ring, I even think, in some cases, because it's gonna it is resulting in games where it's just like, okay, that person got their commander on turn 2 or 3, and that kind of stinks for the whole table. But I do think that is going to be not the norm of this card. I think the norm of this card is you're gonna draw it turn 4, 5, 6, 7 and go, Iggy.
Yeah, I don't want to spend the most time on this card because I think there's a lot of people who talk about it. Yeah. I don't think it's as good as people say. Just, I don't even think it's that good. Mm-hmm. And to be completely honest, I think it starts to, it is almost in the same vein of your mana crypts, of your soul, you know, those fast mana vault. It's in that vein of fast mana, which is something that my playgroup doesn't play already. I mean, between my whole playgroup, none of us play Mana Crypt.
Yeah.
So we're not going to play Jeweled Lotus. Like, it's just not something that we're going to play. And if someone does and is able to, you know, get the commander out turn 2, we don't play powerful enough decks to really win that fast. So, you know, for me and my playgroup, this isn't a problem. CDH is something that I'm not as familiar with. You know, it's a different thing there. So that's, you know, something that I can't really speak to. But I think price and just the actual value of it, you're not going to see it this that often. And when you do, it's not going to be a problem. Because again, how many times are you going to get this turn 1 out of the 99? You know, how often are you going to get in your opening hand? I'm not worried about it. I think it's a cool card. I think it's, you know, the art's beautiful.
Yep.
I do think it's interesting that this is kind of a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. WotC's like, hey, look, it's a reserve list card, kind of. And I just want to see the reserve list go away anyways. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's cool that they're kind of trying to take creative ways around it. I think they're very aware that this is the Black Lotus for Commander. But I don't think it's going to be a problem. I think it's just overhyped.
Yeah, I definitely think that it's... Now, if you gave me the option, if you gave me Omnipotent Power, and I could say, like, should WotC print this card or not? I would probably say no. I don't think they should have, but I don't think that most of us are going to feel an impact on this at our table.
Yeah, no, I think that's really all that needs to be said about it.
Yeah, I do too. So we're going to move on to a combo section mm-hmm. here, where we're going to talk about two very important creatures. One that has gotten a lot of attention, and one that has gotten its own fair bit of attention.
I actually think in the Jeweled Lotus debate, I think this one is worth more debate, honestly.
Yeah, so I think that, well, let's go ahead and we'll get the cards. So the two cards are Opposition Agent and Hull Breacher, okay? So Opposition Agent is, it is a three cost, two and a black. It's a creature, human rogue, with flash. You control your opponents while they're searching their libraries. That already is pretty insane. It also then reads, while an opponent is searching their library, they exile each card they find. You may play those cards for as long as they remain exiled, and you may spend mana as though it were mana of any color to cast them. So the second bit we've seen on a ton of other creatures. We've seen it usually on rogues like Gonti, Robber of the Rich, stuff sure. along those lines. And that is actually, and we talked about this, I think, very briefly on Elder Dragon Skypelander the other day. I 100% think that that is the direction rogue should be, that second ability where it's playing things without paying any mana cost. It feels much more thematic of a rogue than mill, at least in my opinion. So there's that one, and then there's Hull Breacher, which is also a three cost. It's two and a blue for a creature merfolk pirate. It also has flash, and it says if an opponent would draw a card except the first one they draw in each of their draw steps, instead you create a treasure token.
Yeah. Mostly I'm thinking, wow, who needs a Vedalken Ori anymore? Everything just comes with flash.
Yeah, seriously. So the discussion that came up with these cards is it's a discussion of color pie. And I think that's where, and we'll talk about Opposition Agent and some of the issues that people have with that as well. But I want to talk about this color pie issue very briefly. A lot of people look at Opposition Agent and they look at cards like Aven Mind Sensor and Leon and Arbiter and they go, no, that's a white ability. White controls people searching the library, or they stop people from searching the library. And to that, I kind of say the idea of, well, yeah, if there is a different card that reads differently than this that says, you know, it stops your opponents from searching and it has flash, and that card should be white. But that's not what this card says. This card says you control your opponents while they're searching their libraries. That is the blackest ability, one of the blackest abilities in Magic, like by far.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think there is a little bit of identity crisis, if you will, going on with the white color pie. And there's been a lot of discussion about that. So I think it's really easy when you see a card like this and you're like, oh, this is like a better Aven Mind Sensor. It should have been white. You forget the rest of the text. Like, what does it really say? And like you said, controlling your opponent, that is a very black ability. So that being said, should this have been Orzhov?
No, I would even say no to that. I think this card, I think in my personal opinion, this card, I wouldn't have complained if it was Orzhov. I wouldn't have I wouldn't have looked twice at it. But I think if I had to rank like color combinations that I think this should have been, I would have probably said like black blue. I would have probably put one black.
I think you just want this in your rogues deck.
maybe, but I think black blue would have been the one I would have probably picked. Then maybe mono black. Then maybe even Esper before Orzhov, and then Orzhov after that. I really think that this, for some reason, it feels, because you're controlling them searching their library. You're that idea of mind control or deceit and deception. It's very black, and it feels very non-white to me.
Sure. Do you think that this again was a card that WotC should print? A lot of people I hear talking about, well, now it has an effect. No matter whether it's not a May ability. So you play this to stop, you know, our other friend from comboing off and going and tutoring his stuff. I go crack my fetch land and you have to control what I do. You know what I mean? There's no, you can't just say, oh, well, Jake, just go get whatever you want. I mean, I guess I could talk to you and say, hey, look at my deck, Connor, and pick this out. But it does affect everyone. And then, you know, you don't have to pick what I optimally want, you know, so thoughts.
So I think, so here's my thought on that. I've gone back and forth on this. At first, my thought was put May on this card, and I think it is one of the healthiest cards for the format they've printed in a very long time, because it can stop ramp when someone is ahead. It can stop tutoring when someone is ahead, but it can also allow for people to, it can also allow people to ramp and to tutor when they need to catch up. However, recently, like within like the last couple of days even, I have thought about this and I go, you don't need May. This isn't standard. This isn't modern. This isn't legacy. Now, granted, this card is legal in legacy. That's a that is an entirely other conversation that I don't think we have any time to get into tonight.
My brain is too smooth for legacy. I don't understand.
So my thought is, let's for a scenario real quick, I'll flash in my opposition agent and, you know, Liv will search up a card. I was trying to stop her. I'll stop her from searching up her card.
Sure.
Your turn is next. You are behind and you play, okay, Rampant Growth. And I go, Jake, what card do you want? Like, I'm just going to get a forest. I'm like, okay, cool. Go get a forest. It's that simple. Like that, because it's Commander and that conversation can exist within the confines of the format, I think it's okay that May isn't on here. I do still think that I would have preferred if it was, just to save time.
Sure.
But it may also help you if they miss the trigger. It's a whole thing. But I think this card is fine the way it is. And I do think it is very healthy for the format because you can slow people down with their ramping. You can slow people down with their tutoring if they are that far ahead.
Sure. No, I agree. I think one of the most impactful things I heard, and this will be kind of my last thought for this, is, you know, and you can maybe counteract or just share your opinion on this. This is another one of those cards where when you see someone who's playing black and they leave 3 mana open, I'm going to be aware of opposition agent. And is that something that they're going to play? I think that's true to an extent. Again, it's one of those things where my playgroup doesn't necessarily tutor that much, nor do we play cards like this, especially because we play over webcam. So it'd be very hard to go through someone's library over webcam. I mean, most likely I'd probably just be like, you failed to find, you know, or like you said, go get whatever you want. What do you want? And I'll name it, sort of thing. But so for me, it's not personally a problem, but I do think that if you are playing either with people that you don't know or you do know, and you know that they like this card, that's something to kind of keep in the back of your mind. It's like someone keeps open 2 blue. You're like, okay, there's a good possibility that they're doing that for a reason.
Yeah, the classic 1 blue swan song, the classic 1 white path or swords, right? Like it's definitely.
And then they always seem to have it for some reason. Yeah. It's like they never didn't have it.
It's going to be a thing that we have to keep in mind going forward. And real quick, just because we did focus a lot on opposition agent, I do want to at least mention Hull Breacher.
Yeah.
Again, a lot of people made this conversation of whether or not this could be a white card. And again, it cares about an opponent drawing a card, except the first one they drew. This kind of feels like Smothering Tithe on a creature, but it's not white. And to that, I say, yes, I kind of agree with that. However, they've got Smothering Tithe, so I'm okay with this going to blue. And that's all I really have to say about that.
Yeah, blue ramp. Cool. You know, it's not something that they normally get. I think it's an interesting way to incorporate some ramp into blue, going off of what blue does, which is draw cards, you know. And I mean, it's funny because it works against people who are also playing blue. You know, you're playing blue and now you're getting advantage off of them, or if you have some sort of ability that makes them draw a card, you know. So yeah, no, I think it's a decent card. 3 mana for a 3/2 merfolk. Yeah, no, I dig it. I'm gonna put it in my merfolk tribal deck and probably in a few other blue decks. I think it's a staple-ish kind of card, kind of like Smothering Tithe.
Yeah, I wish it was a rogue so it could go in Tazri or in rogues, but you know what? They had to make it a pirate. There was a pirate, red-blue pirate theme in the set, so I understand. I'm not upset that it's not a rogue. However, I am upset that you get to talk about this next card.
Yes, I get to talk about the card that everyone said Wizards was too preoccupied wondering if they could. That they never asked themselves if they should. This is Apex Devastator. It's so ridiculous. It's so dumb. I love it. So Apex Devastator is, and this art is incredible. It's exactly what this art should be.
Yes.
It's 8/2 green for a 10/10 Chimera Hydra with Cascade. It just has 4 Cascade triggers on it. It's so dumb. It is the definition of if Timmy. This idea of, you know, this Timmy player just said, I want a card and this is what would come out.
No, I want 5 cards for 10 mana is what I want. And that's what this does.
Right. Oh my gosh. I think it's funny. I personally love it. I think it's cool.
It's so sick. I'm so excited for this card. I think we talked about this on another episode. I think it was in the Kethis deck tech that Silvala Stampede is one of my favorite cards. And this is just right up that alley. You get so much value, but it's 10 mana. Like it's just so nutty. It's so cool. And we're going to get into this, but the deck that I'm most likely to build from this set is 100% going to have this card in it.
Nice. Yeah, no, I think people are like, oh, it's crazy. 4 Cascade trigger starts at 10. Like, you know, basically anything it hits. Is, you know, you're going to get, Which to what I say is there's plenty of other cards that cost less that just win the game. Think about your Crater Hoof Behemoths, you know, those big spells that as soon as they hit, right, as soon as they hit or if they resolve, it's like, okay, this game is pretty much we're done here. I don't think this is one of those, to be honest, because unless they have haste, I mean, you just board wipe and cool, you know, and then Timmy packs it up and is very sad because they spent their whole turn doing this. That being said, you do resolve it, you get a bunch of stuff, and if they don't have an answer, then you do win the game. And I think that's what I would call balance. You know, if I've spent 10 mana on something and you don't have an answer, I think, yeah, that's a good time to say the game has been won. And who knows, there is the luck factor with Cascade. I don't know, maybe you accidentally get your mana dorks, you know, you get your land whore elves out of there. So I think it's a roll the dice, spin the wheel kind of card. I dig it, and I think it's well earned. I think it's being 10 mana justifies it.
It is the commander card. Like, this is exactly what commander it was for such a long time. It was just these huge bombs, right? Like,
yeah,
we love these bombs. And I mean, I'll be honest, the most common commander in my playgroup here at home is Maelstrom Wanderer. It's probably Maelstrom Wanderer and Marin. I feel like every single person in our group has had a Maelstrom Wanderer at one point, except for me. And I like when Maelstrom Wanderer gets played because we all sit there and we go, get ramp, get ramp, get ramp. And then they flip like a cultivate and a rampant growth. And I'm like, yeah, let's go. And then sometimes they don't.
Right.
Sometimes they flip scary cards. And that's not as fun. But it is a little bit of a fun thing to do around the table. So I am excited for this card. And I really, I don't know. I'm happy about it. I'm a big fan.
Agreed. And I think this next, it's not really a card. It's more of a cycle of cards is going to definitely be something that a lot of commander players are excited about. And Tidal, why don't you tell us about this?
Yeah, so this is the continuation of a cycle of cards that we saw a few years ago in Battle Bond, right? So the set Battle Bond that I talked about earlier that was so good for commander had arguably the best lands printed in commander since OG Duels, probably.
Yeah.
And it was this, there's not even like a necessarily an official name for this. We've always just called it Battle Bond lands in my playgroup.
Yeah, Bond lands. Or
yeah, and the text that is that matters on these cards, they do have two colors of mana, and the text that matters is insert name land here. So this one is Vault of Champions. Vault of Champions enters the battlefield tapped unless you have two or more opponents. And this one, Vault of Champions, adds white and black. White or black, I should say. There's Vault of Champions, Training Center, which is red and blue, Undergrowth Stadium, which is red and white, Spectator Seating, which is red and... Sorry, did I say red and white for Undergrowth Stadium? Undergrowth Stadium is black and green. Spectator Seating is red and white, and Rejuvenating Springs is blue and green. So now we have this full cycle completed. I think it's an important cycle to have completed for this format. And I also think that we should be able to get these cards in every single precon going forward. That's one of the things that I think Wizards has consistently not done is given the correct lands in precons.
Yeah.
I would like to see the applicable ones of this card printed to death in every single precon.
No, I think they're great. Like you said, they're basically OG dual lands for, you know, commander players. Which, by the way, like I'm in a play group that we don't really mind if you proxy up dual lands because we don't think that having access to your mana base is really part of the game. Like, you know, I mean, I guess it is, like, you know, ramping and color fixing and whatnot. But I also personally, I just want to see you play your deck. You know, I want to see what you got. And if you're like, oh man, I have everything but my one last color, like, that's no fun for anyone. So I think these just make your colors work a little bit better. I'm glad we saw the second, like, the finishing of the cycle, and I'm glad we didn't have to wait forever for it. So good job, WotC. Like Tito said, print them into the ground. They're fantastic.
Yeah, and I think that it'd be so healthy for the format. And then on the flip side, let's talk about two cards real quick that we probably don't see too often in our format because they haven't been printed into the ground. And this is going to be a nice, healthy reprint for these two cards that are very expensive. So go ahead, Jake.
For sure. We're going to be looking at Mana Drain and Vampiric Tutor. These are cards that for a while have been, I know personally, out of my price range, you know, sort of stuff. You know, if I was playing competitive with someone, I might proxy them up. But I think like right now, the original, of course, the original one is like $263, and then the Iconic Master is another $100. This one coming in pre-order is about $85, so we'll see. Hopefully that goes down a little bit, but this is two blue. counter target spell at the beginning of your next main phase, add an amount of generic mana equal to the spell's converted mana cost. So this is, again, strictly better counter spell, because not only are you countering a spell, but you're going to be getting all that mana back, which is just insane. It's a cool card. I'm personally glad to see it reprinted. What do you think?
Yeah, I do like this card a lot. I think it's very good. It is insanely good. The thing that's always like really struck me about this is that it says at the beginning of your next main phase. It's not like next turn. It's not like at the beginning of the next turn. No, it is literally at the beginning of your next main phase. Like, you get that mana and you are going to be able to use it.
Exactly.
So it's really good. And I don't own one of these, so I am hoping that I do end up pulling one. I don't necessarily know that I'll buy one. But I do hope that I could pull one in a box or two when I buy them.
Yeah, it's definitely a card that, like, if I pulled, I would be very happy. I'd put it in my one very tuned, highly efficient, quote-unquote competitive deck, which still isn't competitive. But this would just make it a little bit better, and I would call it a day. You'd never see it in any of my other decks. So, again, I'm all for reprints. This is a good one. The other good one, which I probably will play in more, I'd play this in more, even more casual decks, because I just think tutors are cool. This is Vampiric Tutor, which is a one mana instant. Search your library for a card, then shuffle your library and put that card on top of it. You lose 2 life. And I should say this is 1 black mana. So this goes into your black decks. Good card. A great ability. I'm looking at the Commander Legends price right now. It's down to $47 from where it was. It's about $98 to $100. So the Commander Legends bringing it down, hopefully, you know, halving the price. I think it's, again, solid reprint. It's going to be the Chase Mythic. I think this is going to be the Chase Mythic more than Jeweled Lotus, personally, because I think you just play this in war decks.
Yeah, I do think that Vampiric Tutor is a solid reprint. I'm a big fan. I like this one as the choice. And the reason that I specifically like Vampiric Tutor as the choice is it is on top of the library. So it is, like, technically worse than your ones that put it into your hand. But I do like that there's at least some more of a, you have to at least, you know, do this on another player's turn, not on your turn, and then set up your library. And there's a little bit of counterplay to it, even if they don't have counter, like someone can make you shuffle, or if someone can, you know, there's at least something there. So I do think that this is the healthiest of the tutors for them to reprint, besides like Demonic Tutor.
Or Imperial Seal, Watsy, you cowards, reprint Imp Seal. I love it. And it's a sorcery. Yeah. It's even more fair. Anyway, yeah, I don't know why I'm so mad about that. It's really,
it's okay.
This card's $700, you know, the cheap one's like $500. Please reprint it.
Yeah, so I'm happy about this. This will go into all my black decks if I can get them. So that's definitely what I would say about that.
For sure. Well, we are coming to the end of part one, dun dun dun, of our Commander Legends. There's just so much in this set. It's something that we just enjoy so much that we just couldn't really bring ourselves to do just one part, because we feel like we'd just kind of be shafting the set, or we'd be over, you know, we'd brush over some topics that really deserve some conversations.
Yeah, and we're going to be looking in the next part, this will be your little teaser, we're going to be looking at the rest of the cards that we think are going to go into the 99. We talked about the really obvious ones that are the talk of the town right now. We're going to talk about the ones that we also, the other ones that we're excited to see in the 99 and to put into our decks, as well as the commanders that we are personally most excited to build.
Yeah, it's going to be a very fun episode. And so if they can keep up with us and know when that's going to happen, Taito, why don't you tell them where they can find the MTG Educators Network on the interwebs?
The Twitter for the MTG Educators Network is at MTG Ed Network. We're also on YouTube, where if you're watching this on there, hello. If you're not, go hello. Find us and subscribe. That's going to be MTG Educators Network. Look for the purple hat.
Boom, off the dome. That's why I ask you, because I don't remember that.
So you can find us there. Please listen to our other episodes. We have a really cool episode talking about my favorite deck, Kethis the Hidden Hand. We have a really cool episode talking about different formats and an introduction to the podcast as well. So you should definitely go listen to those ones and then come on back for part two of this podcast.
It's going to be fantastic. Yeah, this has been a lot of fun, Taito, and I can look forward to the next one.
Yeah, for sure, man.
Great. Well, final thoughts. I am Casual Jake.
And I'm Taito.
And this has been the MTG Educators Network podcast.
Thanks for watching and listening. And remember, teachers make magic.